Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 3rd, entitled Hiranyakashipu's Plan to Become Immortal, Text 33. Vyaktam vibho sthulam idam shariram yanendriyam pranam manogunams tvam bhunkshe stito dhamani parameshtye avyaktam atma purusha puranaham. Vyaktam vibho stulam idam shariram. Vyaktam vibho stulam idam shariram. Yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Bhunkshe stito dhamani parameshtye. Bhunkshe stito dhamani parameshtye. Avyakta atma purusha puranaham. Avyakta atma purusha puranaham. Vyaktam vibho stulamidam shariram. Yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Bhunkshe stito dhamani parameshtye. Avyakta atma purusha puranaham. Vyaktam vibho stulamidam shariram. Yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Bhunkshe stito dhamani parameshtye. Avyakta atma purusha puranaham. Vyaktam vibho stulamidam shariram. Yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Bhunkshe stito dhamani parameshtye. Avyakta atma purusha puranaham. Vibhustulamidam shariram. Yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Bhunkshe stito dhamani parameshtye. Avyakta atma purusham puranam. Yakta vibhustulamidam shariram. Yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Bhunkshe stito dhamani parameshtye. Avyakta atma purusha puranam. Avyaktam vibho stulamidam shariram. Yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Vumkshestito damani parameshke. Avyakta atma purusha puranam. Vyaktam vibostulam idam shariram. Om shesti to damani parameshte avyaktam atma purusham puranam vyaktam vivastulam idam shariram yenendriya pranamano gunam svam Om shesti to pramani parameshte Mataji? Vam vibostulam idam shariram yenendriya pranamano gunam svam Vyakta atma purusha puranam Mataji? Vyaktam vibostulam idam shariram yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam Vumkshesti to damani parameshte Vyakta atma purusha puranam Okay. Vyaktam manifest Vibho, O my Lord, Stulam, cosmic manifestation, Idam, this, Shariram, external body, Yena, by which, Indriya, the senses, Pranam, the life air, Manaham, the mind, Gunan, transcendental qualities Tvam you Bunkshe enjoy Stitha situated Dhamani in your own abode Parameshtye the supreme Avyakta not manifested through ordinary knowledge Atma the soul, Purusha, the supreme person, Puranaha, the oldest. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O my Lord, being changelessly situated in your own abode, you expand your universal form within this cosmic manifestation. Thus appearing to taste the material world. You are Brahman, the super soul, the oldest, the personality of Godhead. Purport. It is said that the absolute truth appears in three features, namely impersonal Brahman, localized super soul, and ultimately the supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna. The cosmic manifestation is the gross material body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enjoys the taste of the material mellows by expanding his parts and parcels, the living entities, who are qualitatively one with him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, is situated in the Vaikuntha planets, where he enjoys the spiritual mellows. Therefore, the one absolute truth, Bhagavan, pervades all by his material cosmic manifestation, the spiritual Brahman effulgence, and his personal existence as the Supreme Lord. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaham. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaurawan Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyade Shatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shvasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vyaktam Vibhostulamidam Shariram Yanendriya Pranamano Gunam Svam Bhunkshe Sito Damani Parameshtye Avyakta Atma Purusha Puranaham. O my Lord, being changelessly situated in your own abode, you expand your universal form within this cosmic manifestation, thus appearing to taste the material world. You are Brahman, the super soul, the oldest, the personality of Godhead. So here we have again continuation of Hiranyakashipu's prayers to Lord Brahma. And what is very interesting is to note that those prayers are prayers which are practically meant for the absolute supreme personality of Godhead. They're not really so relevant for Lord Brahma himself. We see from this particular chapter how Hiranyakashipu definitely had the enormous knowledge of the Vedic scriptures, how he was very well conversed with the principles of Vedic philosophy, and ultimately the state of the universal affairs. Hiranyakashipu was definitely very well informed, and to a degree we can say he had a realization how the material universe functions. Unfortunately, he didn't know really, or he didn't want to know or accept who the absolute supreme personality of Godhead is. Therefore, he's praying, offering all these choices, prayers, basically to Lord Brahma. So another point interesting is that Hiranyakashipu, as we said, he knew very well what the state of universal affairs is, and he was aiming for those same affairs to be conducted basically by himself. He wanted to take over. It's a very natural psychological condition to aim for something that we at least have some idea what are we supposed to aim for. In any daily affair, when we set some targets, we definitely have to be clear about those targets. We are not aiming for something that just doesn't exist, that doesn't make sense. So here we see that Hiranyakashipu is aiming for something that is the most exalted, something that is the most wonderful within this material creation. He actually wanted to be the Supreme Purusha himself. And as we know, this is the complete and the ultimate, again, from the degrading point of view, conditional state of the living jiva in the material world to try to become the absolute Purusha, absolute enjoyer, absolute controller, absolute proprietor. So Hiranyakashipu was very well aware what is going on in this material universe, and he wanted to take charge of all of those. So in order to achieve that position, he starts praying and trying to please Lord Brahma, hoping that actually at some point of time he can assume the same position which Lord Brahma is having. Lord Brahma is having such kind of interesting encounters practically throughout his existence within this material world. Because every now and then some demon appears that tries to usurp his position. And every time Lord Brahma has to somehow defend his position. One may wonder what is the necessity of Lord Brahma defending his position. In essence, there isn't, because he is fixed. By the mercy, by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his position is fixed. And therefore, definitely nobody can remove him from that position. But, and Lord Brahma, essentially it is not concerned whether somebody else is going to assume his position or not, but sometimes he gets, as we know, bewildered for the sake of Krishna's pastimes and Krishna performing different lilas, so that certain objectives can be achieved. So Brahma is not worried, but we find still that so many demons try and aim for his position. There was one interesting story of Sahasra Kavacha, who was actually a demon, very charitable demon, later on to become Karna, who also was trying to usurp, trying to take over Lord Brahma's position. And Lord Brahma, very intelligently, because we know his body is comprising completely of the element of intelligence, subtle element of the intelligence, dealt with him, and he suggested to him that he should find somebody who is actually the better match for Sahasra Kavacha than what the Brahma is. The story is that Sahasra Kavacha was very charitable demon, very charitable, very pious. And we know that when demons want to achieve any particular aim or position, they go for the best. They practice the best process, they utilize the best means, they're just really very expert in manipulating in different ways with the material energy. And those who are the real demons, therefore they will take the most powerful substance to achieve their means. So the real demons, the most intelligent demons, they take to the process of Vedic culture. They practice the Vedic culture, but not in the devotional way, they practice it in a very demoniac way. They just utilize it for their own selfish purposes. But somehow they have that kind of state of understanding, knowledge and intelligence to see that the Vedic culture can yield incredible results when being utilized for whatever means. In Atharva Veda, it is described, as we know, Atharva Veda consists with so many different different kinds of information that doesn't fit in the other Vedas, which are specifically designed for either yagyas, hymns, or procedures, rituals. So in Atharva Veda there are descriptions how to deal with the life and how to deal with the death, how to also in a way prolong the life and how to shorten or take somebody else's life as well. So demons are also very expert utilizing all this different information, again, as we said, for their own purposes. So they're sufficiently intelligent to understand that they can very much benefit from different kinds of information that is given in the scriptures. And they know also by performing different rituals, by performing different practices, they can gain more power and extend that power onto the others. So in order that appears that they're the supreme controller, that they're supreme enjoyer, that they're supreme proprietor. So they will utilize all different kinds of means. So Hiranyakashipu also, he understands that he can become the controller of the universe. And he also practices the Vedic process. But this is not Daivi Varnashram, this is Asuri Varnashram. And he is ready, and he is definitely, as we see, achieving so many of the goals that he had set for himself. So he has the aim. He is very clear about the aim. And therefore he is very successful. If you want to be successful nowadays in any field, in any sphere of life, we have to have clear aims. We have to understand, we have to know what we are trying to achieve. If we are not clear about, you know, our goals, then how is it possible to achieve anything? So Hiranyakashipu was very well informed, and he had the realizations that achieving particular aim is very much possible by the practice of the Vedic scriptures. So the problem here is that Hiranyakashipu is very selfish and is therefore displaying this demoniac nature. And he's going to do anything and everything just for sake of achieving the means and the goals that he has set up. Interestingly, when he achieved them, Then his real nature surfaced out. And what was that nature? It started tormenting brahmanas, even killing cows, destroying the forests, trying to observe, you know, the whole state of universal affairs, basically twisting them in a different way, that those who are pious, they don't go to the heaven, but they should go to the hell. And those who are impious, they shouldn't go to the hell, but they should go to the heaven. And this way, we can see that his real nature was actually revealed in a very short span of time. As soon as he achieved what he wanted to achieve, immediately he displayed his demonic tendencies, his demonic qualities. So this is the nature of demon. This is the nature of somebody who is trying to, who appears to be very pious, but actually after some time his real nature will surface out. Prabhupada gives very interesting example of somebody's qualities, of somebody's inherent nature, by the example of the dog. He said if you put a dog on a throne, you know, it may appear that that dog is kind of some kind of a king or some worshipable deity or some worshipable personality, exalted personality. But as soon as somebody will throw the bone, the dog will jump and chase after that bone. So his real nature is automatically revealed. Or that another story about the blue jackal who was worshipped, anyway, so many stories, who was worshipped like the king of the jungle, but as soon as the moon came out, he started howling and he revealed that he's actually a jackal. So the demons also, they can't suppress their demonic nature by the practice of the Vedic rituals. They can actually very much just enhance that nature. They can maybe conceal it for some time, but eventually that nature will surface out, because this is their aim. This is something that they are feeding more and more. This is Vaishnava Prabhupada. Actually, Chanakya Pandit said that the milk should not be given to the serpent, because it's just increasing its poison. So when the demons are increasing their powers by the means of the Vedic scriptures, so this is like feeding the snake with the milk. And therefore we know that that kind of snake becomes even more poisonous. And especially the snake who has the jewel on its head looks very attractive. It's very attractive. So we may think also, like here, hearing these wonderful prayers about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that Hiranyakashipu is a very exalted personality. He's practically a devotee. He's such a devotional character. But these ornaments are actually jewels, but the jewels on the head of a snake. It's a very, very vicious, very venomous snake, just waiting how it's going to exploit others and harm others. But that kind of nature, as we see, cannot be concealed for a long time. And we saw that by the actions of the Hiranyakashipu, how he misused his powers which he gained through the practice of Vedic rituals. And this is the case with the Vedic rituals. Vedic rituals definitely can help us to achieve certain material aims. Dharma, artha, kama, even moksha, impersonal liberation. But the difference is that by practicing bhakti, if by some means or ways that demon is exposed to the chanting, congregational chanting of the holy name, his qualities will actually, demonic qualities will become purified gradually. So this is the great difference between the Vedic rituals, the Vedic practice, Karmakanda practice, and the practice of devotional service. So Hiranyakashipu also was blessed by the association of his own son, who was the greatest Vaishnava. And he got the greatest benefit. He didn't get the benefit just by practicing the Vedic rituals. He didn't get the benefit from that. He got the benefit by the association of the most exalted Vaishnava, his son, Prahlad Maharaj. This is how he got the benefit from. He got ultimate liberation. He got ultimate mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he was even very inimical towards his son. Many times this also happens. But devotees don't mind if somebody is even inimical towards them. Devotees who are full of compassion, they will forgive. But of course we know Krishna never forgives. Material energy even doesn't forgive if somebody is inimical towards the devotees. But somehow if a devotee pleads for the sake of that particular personality, then Krishna will excuse. As we know from the story of Ambarish Maharaj, nobody can excuse Durvasa Muni. Only Ambarish Maharaj himself personally. So Prahlad Maharaj was so magnanimous, so compassionate actually towards his father, who he knew, and he addressed him so many times as the king of the demons. And of course Hiranyakashipu took that as the compliment. But Prahlad Maharaj just knew what the state of such kind of conditioning is. And somebody may think it's such a wonderful state. I'm the king of the demons. I'm the king of something. I'm the controller. I'm the most powerful. I'm the most exalted. So unfortunately, Hiranyakashipu didn't have complete knowledge. He didn't have absolute understanding of the nature within the material world. He didn't have that real understanding of the nature of the eternal soul and temporary manifestation of the whole material existence and the body. He didn't have that. He didn't have realization. He spoke it just in a theoretical way. All these prayers, all these verses, all this knowledge that we hear being spoken by Hiranyakashipu was pretty much theoretical. There was no practical realization. There was no vigyan behind it. So he didn't actually even know the real state of his position, the real state of the position of Brahma, and the real state of the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He didn't know that. So he was so foolishly aiming after something that actually cannot be achieved. He was trying to become immortal. He was already immortal, as the spirit soul is immortal. But he was just so ignorant about it. He was thinking that he can be immortal within the temporary material world, and then he can be absolute controller of it. This is something that is very gross misunderstanding about the nature of the material universe. And he mistakenly prays to Lord Brahma as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is something that reveals again his ignorance. But at least from his point of view, what he was hoping for is that he will pray, offer prayers to the Supreme Person whom he considered to be the Supreme Person in the universe. And then after some time, by being granted different blessings and boons and achieving powers by practicing the Vedic rituals and process that we said, he will assume the position of that greatest person. And then he will become the immortal and he will become the ultimate Purusha. So that was his aim. And that we see that very often people who are having that nature of flattering, they very often flatter those whose position they want to take over. And this is most common thing that happens in the material world. Therefore Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj said, one who flatters me, one who praises me, actually is my enemy. But so many times people fall for all these praises and flatteries. They think, oh, very nice. This person had also recognized that I am supreme and absolute and this and that. So they like being praised. Unfortunately, because they are so conditioned. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj said, no, this person who praises me, the person who is flattering me actually is my enemy. So we shouldn't be averse if sometimes somebody points out some of our faults. Of course, it depends in the way how that has been pointed out. But if somebody points out some things that we are not maybe doing something that in a way that we are supposed to do, that actually we should understand that that person is our friend. If nothing else, that person is then reducing our false ego, false pride, and trying to make us understand our real position within this material universe. And that is that we are so insignificant, that we are so small. So at least from that point of view, we should be appreciative. So we shouldn't fall for any kind of flattery. Of course, sometimes flattery is necessary for the higher aims, for the higher goals. Sometimes devotees use it also, but for everyone's benefit. There is once a story. There was one of the senior devotees, actually Prahladananda Maharaj, when he used to distribute books initially in the early days of ISKCON in the West. So he would also sometimes use flattery, because this is what people, as we said, people like to be flattered. But then he would use that in order to give them a book, so that they can realize what the reality is after reading the book. So there was once a case that there was a mother and a daughter on the airport walking together. So Prahladananda Maharaj somehow stopped them. And he asked, the first question he asked was, "Are you sisters?" And then the mother felt very flattered. And she explained actually what it is. But the ice was broken. She was melted completely. And definitely they took the book. There was not necessary, you know, to take much effort afterwards. So little flattery sometimes for the higher cause it's beneficial. But not for some kind of selfish motives, for selfish motivation. And as what we see here in this material world is happening when somebody is trying to observe somebody else's position. That we know so very well. What is happening in the corporate world, what is happening outside in any way, in any sphere of life, as I said. But, you know, people flatter. Why? Because they flatter because they want that position of the person whom they're flattering to. This is what is going on. So Hiranyakashipu is flattering in a similar way. He's not really concerned about Lord Brahma. He's not really, you know, trying to praise him, and he's really appreciative. Or he's not really having any kind of gratitude towards the service that Lord Brahma is rendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's just flattering for the sake of trying to observe his position. So this is demonic mentality. And he will do everything wonderful. He will pretend to be the most greatest, you know, even devotee, so to say. But actually his real nature will surface us sooner or later. Ati chori bhakti lakshane. That is what it said. It's a saying, somebody who appears to be very, very devotional, actually it's a thief. Actually it's a demon. Once here in this Hare Krishna land, I heard a story. There was a cook, who was a very devotional cook, and doing very wonderful service. But at some point, he stole so much money and just disappeared. So then devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, "What happened? He was such a nice devotee, he was like really, you know, praising you so nicely," whatever, anyway, it's like, it's like really doing so many nice services so dedicatedly. And then, you know, at the end, he just, you know, once he got a chance, once he got, you know, like kind of opportunity, he just disappeared with so much Lakshmi. So devotees were confused and they asked Prabhupada, you know, how come this happened? So Srila Prabhupada was pretty heavy, so he said, "Yes, Krishna allowed him to do this so that he can go to hell." That's pretty heavy. So that's the nature of the demon. Of course, as we said, sometimes many things happen, but they also get purified. Somehow being in touch with the devotional service, they get some mercy. They get purified. But still, they'll have to get a reaction for whatever they do. Or whatever we do. We can also compare ourselves. We are also demons. We are in the process of purification. We are not pure yet. So we also have so many demonic tendencies to trying to lord over, to try to control, to try to observe somebody else's position, to try, you know, to advance from that kind of material point of view, instead of trying to become more meek, instead of trying to become more gentle towards others, and trying to become instead more humble. So we have completely wrong conceptions what the advancement means. And therefore we use different kinds of opportunities and different kinds of ways to fulfill those kinds of conditioned material conceptions. So this is what is going on here. Hiranyakashipu praying to Brahma in such a devious way. But Lord Brahma cannot be fooled. He's just, as we heard from Radha Govinda Maharaj, that Lord Brahma, he is not bound to bless somebody. He's just doing it on the behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's blessing, you know, the demons just because ultimately there is some purpose behind also that Krishna wants to fulfill through that. We know that all the pastimes are just lessons for ourselves that we learn. so many different things that we can learn. Like now we are learning so many different kinds of things that can be that are very much relevant to us. So Brahma is giving all these different boons to the demons just because, you know, he knows that Krishna wants him to perform such kind of things, such kind of give him such kind of blessings for the particular ultimate purpose which Krishna wants to fulfill. So Brahma is not bound, he's not really bound to do that, but still he's doing it. And it's not just that because Hiranyakashipu is, you know, tormenting the universe by expanding the, you know, increasing the heat of the universe and making, you know, everybody choked, you know, by different means that he's of his tapasya, by different results of his tapasya. It's not necessary for Brahma. Brahma can deal with this in a different ways. Krishna can also deal with this in different ways. But still, Lord Brahma gives the blessings. He gives the benedictions. That actually, to exalt the position of the real Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the point. Just to point out who is real Supreme Personality of Godhead and what should really we aim also towards for. And not to be like Hiranyakashipu. So when Brahma, as we said, appears to be kind of threatened by some demons like this who is trying to usurp his position, then he also sometimes he can perform different pastimes. Like I said, with Sahasra Kavacha. Sahasra Kavacha was very magnanimous. He was very charitable. He knew I'm getting powers by giving in charity. Giving in charity, somebody can acquire a lot of punya. So he was giving everything in charity. He would conquer the planets, he would conquer the kingdoms, he would conquer so many things, and he would gain so much opulence and wealth. But then he would distribute that. And he would gain even more, because he had distributed. So then he wanted to conquer Brahmaloka, and, you know, assume Lord Brahma's position. But Brahma knew, if he takes my position, you know, he'll just give up everything. You know, he'll give out everything. He'll just make a total mess in the universe. You know, things that has been orderly and under control, now they're going to be completely messed up because he's going to, you know, distribute things in charity here and there, and just it's going to be whole disarray happening in the universal affairs. So then Lord Brahma came with that idea that he should maybe fight with somebody else, because Sahasra Kavacha actually wanted to fight with Brahma. He didn't want to please him in some way. He just kind of wanted to really fight. He wanted to forcefully observe his position. So then Lord Brahma suggested him to fight against Narayan Narayan. And that's a whole different story now. But the idea is that Brahma is not threatened by anybody. He cannot be. If devotee is executing any particular service on behalf of the Supreme Lord, then even if sometimes he's threatened by some demons or some demonic mentality, he doesn't have to be upset about it. Because even if it happens at some point that, you know, his position might be taken away, it's just taken away, like we know in the cases of Pandavas, that Krishna will give them something more. Krishna wants actually to give them something greater. Krishna wants to give them something more wonderful and more blissful and more meaningful than what already is going on. So it may just appear temporarily that the devotee is not really the devotee is kind of forsaken in a way. But this is never the case. Krishna is always blessing his devotees as long as they are remaining pure and faithful to the process of devotional practice. So this is what is going on here, and it's very wonderful, as I said, to hear these prayers, that instead of really praising the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which Hiranyakashipu definitely never would have done it, he would have never praised, you know, Lord Vishnu like this. He's very antagonistic towards Lord Vishnu. But somehow he thinks that Brahma is the one who can give him the blessings. The Brahma is the one who can make him immortal. So let me praise to Lord Brahma. So he's praising him actually as if somebody would be praising the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, "Oh my Lord, being changelessly situated in your own abode." Changelessly situated. So he knows that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's not changing his position. We know that Krishna in Vaikuntha, in spiritual world, in Vrindavan, is always present. He's always present there. He never leaves Vrindavan. He's always changelessly situated there, performing his different pastimes, because that's what his nature, real nature is. And he said, you expand your universal form within this cosmic manifestation. So that's what universal form is. It's a temporary form. It is material form, which is temporary. So it cannot be compared to other forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because this the other forms are not temporary, the other forms are eternal. But this particular universal manifestation is a temporary. This is the difference between other forms and this form. So appearing to taste the material world. So Krishna is expanding, as it is mentioned here, as the Brahman, Paramatma, and of course, as the original Bhagavan. Vedantitat tattva vidas tattva mijjganam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. That there are three features of the Absolute Truth: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. They can be perceived. Very simple example. The most common is one with a train, but the other one with a hill. When we see something in the distance, when we see the mountain in the distance, it appears like a cloud. When we come a little closer, we can distinguish the feature of the mountain and maybe some trees and rocks or whatever there might be on the mountain itself. But once we step on the mountain, once we are on the mountain, then we can see all the details of the mountain. So in a similar way, when transcendentalists meditate and try to achieve some realization of the Absolute, then they approach first through Brahman, where there's some resembling feature of the Supreme Absolute qualities is there, and then more closer Paramatma, and then absolutely very intimate, and that is the relationship with the Bhagavan. So Krishna expands himself through these different features in the Absolute, in his Absolute form. So that definitely doesn't apply to Lord Brahma. So we see here how Hiranyakashipu is mistaken about Brahma's position. But he's just flattering, as we say. Lord Brahma doesn't expand himself as a Paramatma, that's for sure. Or in any other feature as such. So the cosmic manifestation is the gross material body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enjoys the taste of material mellows by expanding his parts and parcels, the living entities. So this material world, all the temporary, Krishna, it serves different purposes. Krishna manifests himself not only to fulfill the desires. Krishna achieves different aims by particular activity, but simultaneously many different things are accomplished. So although essentially he expands this material world so that conditioned living entities can try to fulfill their desires, but essentially Krishna also expands this material world because he also derives some taste. He derives some satisfaction by enacting his different pastimes in this material universe. So particular pastimes that are happening here, they're not happening within the spiritual world. There are no demons in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, Krishna is always ever fresh, ever young. Krishna is not appearing as a small boy. Then there are a few other features that they're not present within the spiritual world. Just trying to recollect. Anybody knows? There are three more, there are five. So there are no demons in the spiritual world. Krishna is always 16 years old. Then demons cannot enter. Yeah, or nobody else can enter the spiritual world, but as they can do that, well, that's basically the same. There are no demons. What else is there? There are a few more. Anyway, doesn't matter. So that's something that Krishna is actually tasting within the material world. So he's expanding also his different pastimes like this. So he's full and complete. Om Purnama Daha Purnamidam. Everything is perfect and complete within himself. But he just manifests this completeness in a different way. So he manifests his completeness also through the material world. He's tasting something, some particular pastimes within this material world that he's not tasting within the spiritual world. So he's enjoying different rasas, different mellows. So therefore, the one absolute truth, Bhagavan, pervades all by his material cosmic manifestation, the spiritual Brahman effulgence, and his personal existence as the Supreme Lord. So Krishna is everywhere, absolutely everywhere within this material universe. Nothing could be functioning without his presence. He's just expanding everywhere, especially in his form of Paramatma. Because without his section, nothing can happen. Upadrishta and Anumanta. As a Paramatma, he's just absolutely aware He's the overseer, he's the premier. Whatever is going on in this material universe. So even Hiranyakashipu couldn't have attained any position that he aimed for unless Krishna would have sanctioned it. And he did. He did obtain his position for some period of time. But that was a very short period of time. So there is the difference between that, as we said, demonic mentality and the devotional mentality. It's very interesting if we compare Bali Maharaj with Hiranyakashipu. Bali Maharaj also wanted to be the, you know, supreme enjoyer, controller, everything of the universe. He wanted to be the king of the heavenly planets. And he observed the Indra's position. But the difference is that he surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is that we know that Krishna, yeyatamam prapadyante tastataiva bhajamyaham. Krishna never takes anything from us what we already have. Krishna just adds more. So actually, although it appears that he took from Bali Maharaj his position, it appears that he was completely humiliating him, bowing him with the robes and dragging him down to the Patala, lower planetary systems. But it has been said, of course, in Patala, Bali Maharaj has the most wonderful association of the Lord in the form of Gadadhar as his gatekeeper. And this is what Krishna is ready to do for his devotee, for somebody who is surrendered to him. But also, even materially, Krishna will fulfill Bali Maharaj's desire that he's going to be reigning as Indra as well. Because the next Indra, it's going to be Bali Maharaj. So Krishna fulfills the desires, even such kind of material desires. It doesn't matter. But somebody who is a devotee, of course devotees later on don't care about such desires, like Dhruva Maharaj. They don't want them. Because once by the practice of devotional service, they obtain Krishna, they're not interested in any broken glass compared to the most wonderful jewel. They're not interested in it. And this is the state of the devotional consciousness, which Srila Prabhupada also wanted to spread throughout the world. And that was his mission. Srila Prabhupada wanted to inform everybody what spiritual life really means, what a spiritual life actually is. So therefore he took so much of effort and undertaken so many austerities just to try to establish this mission of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, as we know, how many hardships he underwent, but Prabhupada never desisted. Prabhupada was always so determined, so undeterred by any kind of obstacles that would have appeared in the process of spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. So Prabhupada had the real challenges that were facing him, but he never desisted. He never gave up. Just the whole journey to US, and didn't just imagine being somewhere, you know, where in some unfamiliar place. I know when I came first to India, I was in Gujarat, and somehow ended up in a Padayatra for 2 weeks. And we just ended up in some villages and somewhere. I just didn't know where in the universe am I. Because life just felt completely lost. But somehow by the process of devotional service, you know, I just, you know, kept on, you know, the practice, the conviction, everything was there. But just that feeling of being kind of alone in a sense of in some unknown place was a very, very foreign, very uncomfortable feeling. Which went on for some time, just being somewhere absolutely in an unfamiliar environment. I mean, I could relate to that feeling. Just imagine Srila Prabhupada coming, you know, from Vrindavan, again, completely different environment, and struggling there to try to establish the mission of his Guru Maharaj. And for 1 year, continuously trying, facing so many difficulties. And nobody was coming to help. Nobody was coming forward to help Srila Prabhupada. But he never gave up. He was just so fixed, so determined in the mission of his Guru Maharaj that he was ready to execute. So many struggles. And just, you know, dealing, also sometimes, you know, you can have that feeling, you know, after practicing devotional service and, you know, trying to have some standards of cleanliness or some standards in the mode of goodness. And then you encounter somebody who is in complete tamas, or maybe it's passion to some degree, it's not so easy to interact. You really have to be, you know, compassionate and merciful or some just small things, you know, people will, you know, one devotee, he told me why, that story that somebody, some of the people just asked him, why you're not shaking hands? So they couldn't understand why he's not shaking hands. And then some of the friends of those people came, and that person was kind of poking the nose and stuff like this, and then they kind of, you know, just before they were about to shake the hands, to offer the handshake and stuff, and then devotee said, okay, now you see. I mean, they got the point. People are very, very unclean, just in the basic, you know, basic habits, basic ways. Just imagine Srila Prabhupada having to live in a place where you have to keep your bhoga to offer to Krishna, where there is a meat kept. I know, I personally, when I go home, you know, I my mother already knows there shouldn't be anything in the fridge. Just cleans, empties up everything, and then maybe I can stay for some time. Otherwise she knows I won't stay there. So she does that. Because it is very uncomfortable. Of course, for the sake of mission and preaching, sometimes we, you know, there has to be a lot of tolerance, actually. And that tolerance has been exhibited by Srila Prabhupada. When devotees went preaching to Russia, and that time Harikesh Prabhu Swami at that time, he said, Prabhupada, there's nothing to eat here, it's only meat. How are we gonna, you know, how is it possible? Prabhupada said, doesn't matter, eat meat but keep on preaching. For the highest purpose. So all these different, you know, standards and conceptions that we have in devotional life, even all that can be compromised just for the sake of preaching. So Prabhupada was ready for all that. Of course, later on we see how he raised all the standards as soon as the opportunity was there. But it is a struggle. It's not an easy thing. I mean, I'm just saying, from my personal experience, somebody who is in the lower modes and trying to elevate them a little higher, it's like it's very difficult. It requires a lot of patience, a lot of tolerance. So Prabhupada underwent all that struggle, and on this day incorporated the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. After 1 year of such a tremendous struggle. And even at that point, he didn't really have any sincere followers. But just few boys and girls around who just kind of were coming for some time. And that's all. Nobody was really committed. Nobody was committed. But still, Prabhupada just did it. Because Prabhupada had a vision. Prabhupada had understand that things will manifest in the future. It's just a question of a time. So nothing would deter him from that particular mission that he had. So established the International Society of Krishna Consciousness for the benefit of everyone. And it is stated in those seven goals of ISKCON, just for the sake to provide the association, for the members to associate together and enhance their Krishna consciousness. And that they can live a very simple life, to have the model through which they can practice Krishna consciousness. Of course, other aims are based on preaching, Sankirtan, book distribution, promotion of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. And he established an International Society of Krishna Consciousness, basically, of course, as a non-profitable organization and with different sets of rules. Because Prabhupada had very good experience what management actually means and how to establish particular society so that it can be running very smoothly without being threatened by any kind of personal ambitions, as we see in cases. Sometimes it may appear like in case of Hiranyakashipu or some demonic mentality that even Srila Prabhupada later on had to deal with. Even with that, Srila Prabhupada had to deal with. Somebody who was very flattering to Srila Prabhupada, but actually at some point wanted to be like Srila Prabhupada, even greater than that. So on this most auspicious actually day, which is a day of incorporation of International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we shall actually express our gratitude to Srila Prabhupada to enable us to practice this Krishna consciousness in the most wonderful association of the devotees. Because we don't know Krishna. The only way we know Krishna is through the devotees. And Krishna expands himself through the devotees. And this is how we are getting taste, and this is actually how we can advance in the spiritual life. So Hare Krishna. So I will stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hello. Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, Lord Brahma is a position or he is a person?
Huh?
Lord Brahma.
Brahma?
Yes, he is a position or is he a person?
It's a position.
So here you can see in Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu, he is offering prayers to a person, Lord Brahma. That means he is a person.
Yeah, he is a person.
Particular. He is offering prayer to the particular deity, not that he is offering prayer to a position. Here you can see in Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu, he is offering prayer to a person, not to a position. So how can one identify the Lord Brahma is a position or he is a person?
So how can one identify whether Lord Brahma is position or person? Whatever it is, that person, he didn't actually qualify for the position that Hiranyakashipu was addressing. That's the point. Through all these prayers, actually, Hiranyakashipu is addressing Supreme Personality of Godhead. That position, it's not applicable to Lord Brahma's position. Brahma is not, you know, absolute truth. Brahman, Paramatman, or Bhagavan. That's not what Brahma is, either by position or either as the person himself. It's a jiva tattva. So position also, it's not applicable. He's not. He is the secondary creator. Without Krishna, he cannot do anything practically. He receives the blueprint according to which also he has to be instructed to create. So he is a person, but he doesn't apply also for the position that Hiranyakashipu is praying for. Yeah? Okay, thank you all very much. La Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.